You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's recording to one track in Audacity in the studio here. So
Audacity, I haven't heard that name and haven't heard her name in a long time. That's great, man. That's it's still simple to use.
BFM keeps it real, like a little too real. Okay, cool. Cool, we're still going. Great.
There's a snake in the fuse, slithering on the floor. He's got his hair slicked back, wears his sunglasses indoors.
Paul Marty Tamaki Makoto, it is my great pleasure to have with me here the one and only Daniel Vernon, a.k.a. Yeehaw the Boys, a.k.a. lead singer of the band Darts from Wellington, New Zealand. How's it going, buddy?
You're all right, buddy. It's going good, man. How are you?
I'm great. Hey, I'll ask the questions, okay? So just... Okay, thanks.
Journalism here.
Now, listener, if you have just crawled yourself out from under the underside of a rock, Dan's distinctive cartoony bug-eyed, buck-toothed cartoon style has probably graced your Instagram feed by some point. If the sight of the orange election man kind of gets your hormones stirring, then I think that's down to you exclusively.
Yeah, I'll take the blame for that one.
Your new book, compilation of your comics, A Few More Slices of Heaven, is out now. Where can people find that?
They can find it on my website, which is just danielvernon.bigcartel.com. Otherwise, I believe it's in most Fly Nun stores and right on Supersound down in Christchurch. But if you're in Auckland, it'd be Fly Nun if you look into it.
Big shout out to Right on Supersound.
Brick and Mortar.
Nice.
Yeah, love Right on, man.
My favorite one off the new one is the best thing you've done so far, which is the Hunger Games Lolly Scramble comic. The lethal cutthroat sort of law of the jungle thing was, I kind of suppressed it mentally, like I was in the war or something. But I fucking love the way that your artwork and your songwriting, for that matter, really kind of capture a very distinct Kiwi style that I really would like to talk about a lot.
Oh, thanks, man. That's really kind. I think there's a lot of stuff in there from my childhood and things.
Anyway, let's talk about Darts. So you guys just finished recording your third full-length studio album. Is that right?
We're about 80% of the way there, but the large chunk of it is pretty much done. But yeah, it's exciting.
Good. What's the name of it?
We don't have a name yet.
All right. Well, what are some of the topics you're going to be exploring?
The usuals. We've somehow managed to do a third song about landlords, or at least renting, which surprised me. Just usual current event stuff. Some silly ones. I think there's no songs about drinking, which might surprise the critics of darts out there, please the critics of darts out there.
Your very first song, actually, now that you mention it, was something of a renter's anthem, 40 Rutherford Street. There's holes in the walls and a lack of insulation. My girl's getting sick. She's hyperventilating. 900 a week. Was that 2019 you started as a band?
Yeah, we started at the start of 2019, or we started maybe in 2018.
Depends what.
Maybe it was 29. I can't remember. COVID kind of re-throws everything off a bit.
This is a hard-hitting journalistic interrogation. So the main question I have to ask about the proto darts band Scared of Girls is: do you still have the tattoo?
I do still have a tattoo. Yeah, that's the thing about tattoos; it doesn't go. They don't go away.
Where was it?
Luckily, it's on my very upper thigh.
Good. It was somewhere extremely hairy, so that doesn't really
upper thigh
narrow it down.
No.
I think one thing that popped into my mind was in around 2019 when you formed as Darts, I was like, sick, this is awesome. We have the chats at home now. We're going to have access to this 24/7. But you've always, as a band, been like much more than a Kiwi pub rock band. Even from the very first song, 40 Rutherford Street, there's always been a slightly politically charged edge to it. While avoiding being preachy like a lot of very good punk bands can be, but I think one of the finest qualities that your work has, visual and musical, is it really is for the everyman. It's meeting people exactly where they're at, whether that's in a rotting villa or at Crate Day or something like that.
Yeah, I think like there are much better political punk bands than us that, not to use the word preachy, but definitely get to more the crux of the topics than we do. But I like the idea that we can, you know, be someone's first introduction or kind of trick them into maybe starting to get into those genres or even just into those topics in general. Yeah, I like to think of Darts as like a band everyone can listen to and get into and maybe Trojan horse them into kind of getting on board with what we kind of sing about and address.
So moving on to your second anti-landlord song was, of course, my favorite borderline Maoist, Flat Inspection. I'm told that when you played that song over in Germany, it kind of went over their heads a bit.
Yeah, it's quite interesting in some European countries where they obviously were housing crises and it's easier to buy a house and access to healthcare and all that stuff. Some of the songs that we sing about, they're like, oh, we've already solved those issues over there, so they're not really... But I still enjoy a lot of the songs and stuff. They just like rock and roll. Then I don't really care, but they don't really are super invested in the lyrics sometimes.
A little language barrier there, maybe. But of course, you did get off the back of a extra large sized European tour last year. How did that go?
Yeah, it was stressful, to be honest. Rollies, our drummer, broke his ankle in three places pretty badly. Ironically, fell down the stairs. In his house. Read into that what you will. And you can't prove I pushed him. But yeah, so we had to kind of decide last minute if we were still going to go ahead with it. And then luckily we got our friend J-Lo, Jake Love, to jump in. And there was a bit of a switcheroo on the instruments within the band as well. So it was a lot of fun, but a really good learning experience of what we are able to do and what the core members of the band bring. But it was a lot of traveling to countries I've never been to in my life. And traveling and playing music is such a great way to see the world and actually get to meet people instead of just avoiding tourist traps. So I had a really great time. It took a toll emotionally, but that's just the nature of those things.
You still exist as a band after the end of it, so I think that could be considered a pretty big success.
Oh, yeah. I'm shocked that we still exist. It's a lot of tight quarters and a lot of lack of sleeps and long drives, but... I think you're still just, at the end of the day, have to stop and, you know, take stock of the fact that you're playing in Europe and the band's paying for it. So it's a dream that a lot of people don't get to see through or realize. So we're very fortunate and, you know, grateful.
I feel like you guys, as a band, have been going from strength to... starting that again. I feel like you guys as a band have been just going from strength to... fuck! You guys as a band have been doing really well lately. I feel like the what could be considered the logical next step for a band in your position would be something like a United States tour. I saw somebody ask you about that on your Instagram after the Europe one, and you said something along the lines of, not till you sort your shit out. I'm sure that's going to happen any day now.
I don't know how I feel about going there at the moment. I think it feels very dangerous and... unwelcoming. It's like you got to start looking at that country through a different lens. Fuck that race. Fuck that race, boss. Fuck that race, boss. Fuck you. Like, obviously, I'd like to perform there, but I don't know if I want to be, as it currently stands, I don't know if I really want to, one, like, allow them to have the pleasure of having us. Nor would I feel particularly safe and want to be put into those environments. I think it's been floated within the band, but one, it's super expensive even to get in, and a very smug country. Like, you got to pay so much to even get considered for a visa. And then all the hoops to get jumped through just to go to this country that thinks highly of itself is, yeah, I don't know. Europe's a lot more fun. Australia's great. New Zealand's great.
I'm moving to London. Speaking of Australia, I believe you're coming to me from sunny Nam West Island.
That is true. So Crispy and I live over here now, and the other two still live in Wellington. So we've got a foot in each place. So, but yeah, no longer the whole band from Wellington, New Zealand. That's where the band was born.
How is Melbourne?
It's good, man. It's just alive is the best way to sum it up. Like, you can do anything. You can go to see shows or bands or go to the pub till like 10 p.m. any day of the week. Like, there's something always on, and you're just interacting and meeting a lot of people that are also just passionately engaged in something. Not necessarily has to be in the arts, but like just meeting people that are excited about what they do, and like you're excited to talk to them about what they love, and they're excited to learn about what you're doing, and everyone's just quite friendly, like approaches you out of the blue and stuff. So I'm just enjoying, I'm feeling a little bit more productive and a bit more motivated here than I was at the kind of tail end of the last like year and a half in Wellington. So it feels nice to be in a, I think it's a classic, like the environment that you're in and you put yourself in and people you interact with kind of ends up having its own effect on you. So I'm glad to be around, just be around things happening and feeling like I'm just more motivated to kind of be like, okay, there's so much more to do and accomplish. So that's great.
Bigger pond, same fish.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I was lucky enough to actually catch you guys in Australia at a show in 2024, and it was really fun to see you adapt the material for an international audience. Something like Bath Salts, with its central thesis of Dave Dobbin being a near religious experience. I noticed that one got cut from the set. Things like that. How do you bring your very Kiwiana style of writing to an international audience?
You'd be surprised at how universal a lot of the themes are, and I think also being from New Zealand has its attractiveness, I think, for a lot of people, especially in Europe, more so than Australia. But yeah, a lot of the themes are universal, like the renting currently in like Nam, to rent a house is, yeah, it's incredibly difficult, and like the rents are skyrocketing, there's lines for every place. You're competing with people, like it's borderline even worse than it was in Wellington when we wrote the song. So like that translates very well across the ditch.
But I don't know, maybe people don't even have a image in their head of what a Kiwi is. And I think what you do with your art and your music too, especially, is allow us to have a conception of who we are. A lot like someone like Murray Ball. I've found it's helped me form more of an image of who we are as a people in an age when the online world can very much flatten culture out.
Yeah, I think that was definitely the intention with it as well, is to, especially since I spend so much of my day drawing comics that are address topics that are very divisive at the moment, and like, you know, our government trying to split us up for nefarious reasons. I think making comics like the ones that are in Slices of Heaven for me, and I think also watching the reaction to them when I post them online just kind of reminds us like of the things that are good about the country and the things that are good about us as a community of people that I love and that everyone else loves, just to kind of just ground myself, and I hope ground other people that, you know, it's okay to step away from politics from time to time and be reminded of what is so great about New Zealand. So yeah, it's therapeutic for me. I think it's good to break up the timeline every now and then with a comic that's just, can you believe that we used to, you know, mix bulrush with a with lollies, like it's insane. This is what New Zealand really is, in my opinion, these insanely specific but wonderful things.
So you're doing your art full-time at the moment?
Yeah, I'm giving it a shot. I'm about 3 months in. Not by choice. I was working a part-time job, but the company went into liquidation. So I kind of got, I guess, life kind of just pushed me into it. And so far, so good. But yeah, so we'll wait and see. But I've been doing it pretty much like, I've been doing like 30 hours of it for the past 2 years. So it's kind of felt like a full-time job.
I imagine you've been drawing your entire life. When did you decide to really start taking it quite seriously?
Once again, is just circumstances made me take it seriously. I'd always just drawn, and I had a good back catalogue of stuff, but it was never ever a career thing. Like, it's, you can't just find a job drawing comics. So just a couple of things went viral on Instagram, and then I was lucky enough that I had a good back catalogue of things I've already had created. So I was able to start like building on what had built on the numbers in the audience that started to build, and then was able to continue to grow that. And from that came a decent amount of opportunities and things like the Substack and doing these books and stuff have come along, and it's been great. But yeah, it's been a lot of hard work and kind of just having to really push myself. But once again, like the band, like these are things that I wanted to do since I was a kid, and I'm very, very fortunate to be able to do them. So it's, you know, waking up every day and being like sitting down, drawing cartoons and thinking of silly things and having an audience respond to that's really, really, really cool.
Art-wise, who were your major influences when you got started? Who were you trying to look like when you were doing that?
I don't know if, like, I think I grew up on a lot of, like, Mad Magazine satirists. So a lot of the artists for that magazine, like Tom Richmond and a few others, are really cool. Obviously, Jamie Hewlett from The Artist of Gorillaz was one of my favorite artists of all time. But a lot of those Mad Magazine artists, like, my favorite thing about them is they always, like, hide, like, 10 jokes in every panel they'll draw. Like, it wasn't just, like, reading the words and moving on. It was, like, so much to soak in those original vintage Mad magazines. So I think that's definitely a huge influence on me. I obviously am a huge fan of comic books in general, so a lot of superhero stuff, but those Mad magazines and the way they just, like, able to use satire and make the most of space, so it's not just like a read a joke and move on. Like, you have to really soak it in. That's what I try to do a little bit with my stuff, is add extra details or small things. So, like, if you actually take the time to read and soak in the art, you get to find a couple extra jokes.
Sergio Aragonés was always my favorite Mad artist.
Yeah. The stuff he does is incredible, especially since there was a language barrier. That's why I love his comics. Most of his comics don't have word balloons. But his ability to, like, tell jokes and capture things without having to use is really incredible. And his output was insane. Like, he did, like, two-page comics for Mad Magazine, and then, yeah, filled in all the gutters of the entire magazine with visual jokes. His output's insane. The whole Usual Gang of Idiots of the Mad Magazine. I've been trying to collect a lot of the old vintage ones from the 60s at the moment, because the covers and the inside jokes and the art is just, honestly, I would love to just hang half of it on my wall. It's just incredibly creative humor.
Let's bring back the band a bit. Who have you been listening to when you were making this new album? Who influences the way you write your lyrics and the way the band sounds as a whole?
That's a great question. I don't know who I was listening to that directly influenced the dance album. It's very different to the last one, to Dangerous Day. I think a lot of people will be surprised about how it sounds. There's a lot of less punky stuff and a lot more melodic stuff and a lot of experimenting with samples and things. Like, Rollies has been doing incredible work. I really think this is going to be an album that reflects his talents a lot more. But I think recently I've been listening to a lot of, obviously, Viagra Boys. I've subscribed to your mom's OnlyFans. The new Geese album, but I wouldn't say those directly influence the album. I think there's still a lot of core New Zealand stuff in there as well. Like, when we were riding, I was listening to a lot of Prince Tui Ticket, which I think also comes into that book as well. Hoki mai, hoki mai, ki te wakainga. E tu tuki te tu manako. And just, I had made a huge playlist of New Zealand music that I loved, just so I could have that when I moved over here to Melbourne. So still a lot of just listening to New Zealand music and stuff, but I don't think there's, like, a huge influence on our sleeves when it comes to this one. I think there's definitely going to be a lot of different things, and just definitely trying to challenge myself a lot more lyrically. There's a few more vulnerable things on this one, which I think it's been awkward, but in a good way for me. So in terms of this year, I've just been listening to, obviously, Geese. Everyone's listening to Geese. It's the hot thing at the moment. Just pretend I'm not there, like it's shame.
All right, how about who have you been playing with over the years, whether it's in Europe, whether it's scoring sick opening slots, that's really, like, changed the game for you, influenced you not so much sonically, but, like, in how you act, stage presence, ways of doing things, that kind of thing?
We opened for Unrights at the end of at the end of 2024 into 2025. And I think they were a big influence on just how, I think, not necessarily musically, but just how they operate as a band, as a team, who they surround themselves with, and just Wait, everyone walks away with the opinions of them. They are some of the nicest people I've ever met in music. Like, they've taken so much time to spend, they spent so much time with us and took the time to like get to know us, and we were just like incredibly nice. And then they had a whole team of people surrounding them who were also equally as nice and not like what you'd expect from a band of that level. And it was just an incredibly enjoyable experience. So we did a pretty big tour with them throughout Australia and stuff. And that was also with Fiddler, and the juxtaposition between those two bands and the way they approach just like being friendly and courteous and looking out for other people and stuff is incredible. Like, we walked away like in love with those three Dune Rats guys. And I kind of realized like my goal in life, if we continue doing music, is I'd want people to, whoever we work with behind the scenes and whoever we interact with, and like with our fans, if anyone gets to walk away talking about us the way that we talk about Dune Rats, I'd be a very happy, content man of my life. Like, doing music and the people you interact with in this industry, as I'm sure you're aware, you can meet some big egos and you can meet some pretty awful people. So that was just like nice to be like, oh, you can succeed and be, you know, have a great career without being a complete asshole.
It probably helps. That's what I would have thought.
I really think so. Yeah, like, these guys continue to get great opportunities, and I would say it's 100% because everyone's had a great experience with them. And it's the same here in New Zealand. Like, we've played with so many local bands, and I don't, like, everyone's so lovely, and we usually choose opening acts that we want to see live, and it's just great. Like, the talent and community here is incredible. And it goes to show, and like, even with venue owners and, you know, people that work in the media like you and that, like, the relationships that we've built are purely based off like passion and actually treating everyone on the same level instead of thinking that you're hot shit or anything, you know? And I think that goes a long way.
It's way too small of an ecosystem, especially here, but also in Aussie, exactly. to not do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
In terms of internationals, who do you reckon's on the come up? Like, while you were overseas, who can you tell me about that I'll seem real cool for knowing about?
Oh, there was one band I saw. We played this festival in Paris. This band called Adore. We played a festival in Paris, and it was called like Block Party. And I had a few hours to spare, so I went and checked out a couple of other bands. And this band Adore were just fantastic. They have a song called Postcards. You, Paddy, would love it. It's a really, really good song. So yeah, that was my number one song of the year. So it was this random band from Ireland, which, you know, Ireland's popping out great bands left, right, and center at the moment.
All right, let's bring the interview to a bit of a close. Darts, of course, playing a Tiny Summer Tour Thursday, 22nd January, Wellington, sold out, psych. Friday, 23rd of January, that is Space Academy in Christchurch with Kisser and Out of Luck. Little friend of the show, Reef Brazendale, poking his nose in right there. Saturday,
20th. Lovely.
Oh my God, yeah. He's going to be a star, sweetheart.
He will be. Yeah, he'll be big.
And of course, Saturday, 24th of January, that is at Whammy Auckland with CCTV and Slow Rage. If it isn't sold out by the time this goes to air, get your skinny ass over to undertheradar.com and get yourself a very reasonably priced ticket at that show. I will certainly be there. If you miss out, you're just going to have to catch Darts playing opening for Upchuck. That's in March, Friday 13th at Double Whammy in Auckland, Saturday 14th, San Fran, Wellington. Dans, have you got any final parting words of wisdom for our listeners?
Just, you know, just believe in your dreams.
That's smart. All right, and last order of business, can I please get a station ID from you? Just something along the lines of, hey, this is Dan from Darts. You're listening to 95 BFM. And then say something like real funny and like witty. And then
just say something real funny. Oh, man. All right. This is Dan from Darts. You're listening to 95 BFM. Stay horny.
Good. That's a wrap, boys. You can catch Darts playing at Whammy, probably, Saturday the 24th of January. Dan's new book, A Few More Slices of Heaven, available on Instagram from Big Cartel Dan, thank you so much for your time today. I will catch you soon, and I wish you all the best in 2026.
Right back at your patty.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.